you get to ask us questions. We have a couple that people on the internet have asked. But really, it's really wherever we want to head with this.
We got a great question in the previous period. Do you want to ask it again for the mic?
This was a spontaneous question, and now we're making you be less spontaneous.
Where does the Canadian A fit into this?
That is definitely a discourse protocol, and I can't believe we didn't mention it.
Well, let's maybe talk about some local discourse
parts. Yeah, local discourse. So the Canadian A, for anybody who doesn't know what it is, not this crowd, but maybe some of our listeners. We have listeners all over the world, which is really cool. So there's a couple different A's in English. So you can say something like, how's it going, A? Which is, you're kind of like just signaling the end of a phrase. That's kind of that's the end of the sentence ones, which we didn't get into as much. We got stuck at the beginning of the sentence with your harks and beholds, and your Beowulfian what? And we didn't get to the end of the sentence as much. So that the how's it going a or the I can't do it with going. It's like not the wrong genre match, like the wrong register match. Or the something like nice car, eh? Those are good. The one that's the most Canadian, those are kind of the end of the sentence and they're seeking confirmation or agreement. So like if I say nice car, eh, I'm like starting some small talk, starting some, you know, like I like your dress, eh? Then that's like I'm starting, you know, and you're like, oh thanks. I'm seeking a response. But the most Canadian, that kind exists in some other varieties of English as well. The most Canadian of the A's is the continuous A. So that's something like, so let's say you're telling a story. So I was walking down the street, A, and I saw this guy, A. And then I looked at him again, A, and he was like, well, no, that's the wrong genre.
But it lets you know that something's coming.
Yeah, it lets you know that I'm not finished. It's that kind of filled pause, A, that, like, I'm chaining these things together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the one that, like, really only Canada has.
Okay.
And the other, A, is in general associated with Canada, but that's, like, the most Canadian one, and the other ones are also in other dialects. But that's definitely a discourse marker. Actually, we should do if anybody can think of a discourse marker that we haven't mentioned yet.
And you want to ask us about it, go for it.
And you want to just be like, brownie points, are you going to give them some candy?
Yeah. Australian-wise, I think two important ones are yena, which is a like, at the start of the sentence, I was like, yena, that was really good dinner. So it's a kind of
yano. Yeah, but not yana.
And you can even get a like, yeah, that was pretty good.
So there's yana, but there's also na ya.
Na ya, and there's yeah, na ya.
Okay. Yeah. And could you elaborate on the difference between them?
Yeah, no. I can't off the top of my head. I'd have to consult my intuition. I have a friend who always says, you'll say something, you'll be like, I really like this thing, and she'll say, "No, yeah, I like it too." So, no is kind of semantically devoid of content there, and is being a like, "I am saying a thing. I agree with you," rather than "I disagree with you. I agree with you." So that's a very Australian one. The other is one of my favourite terms to bandy around in linguistic: final but.
That's not, that's the butt with one T, not the butt with two T's, just to clarify things.
And the final but is a like, it's softening things up a little bit. So you could say something like, if you went out for a really horrible dinner, you could say, the restaurant was nice, but.
I can say final but in the context of the restaurant was nice, but. But that's really clearly so, kind of trailing off.
So that's, you're not as far along the road of grammatical enlightenment. So you're still using it where it has some kind of intonational indication that there should be something coming. There's a really great, I won't kind of go into detail too much, but along this path of becoming less and less semantic and more discourse markery, one of my all-time favourite pieces of terminology, it is used as what we call a Janus-based butt. Jenna's butt face is what I use in my game.
So please explain this.
So at the point you're using it, it's looking back to the sentence that was said. It's still pretending that it's got something coming forward. So it's looking forward and looking back.
So this would be Janus, as in Janus, yes, the Roman god
not
of like Janus forward
who
and backwards.
Works as a dentist. Yeah.
My sister's named Janus. Yes. This is going to be really awkward for her.
Hi, Janus. Face butt.
Maybe don't listen to the bonus episode. I don't know. I just don't think you'd like it.
those are the two. Yena and butt.
So this is a butt that's looking forward and backward like it's...
It's part of the grammaticalization process. So
okay.
If something's Janus-faced, it's like still looking... it's still kind of doing its function... But it's not really leaving you with anything too much information-wise.
Okay. So it's like you can kind of recover the original meaning.
Yeah, it's still on its way.
So things like can, like nobody thinks of that as related to know anymore. But things like gonna, people still think of it as kind of related to going to?
Yeah.
Okay.
I like that.
Okay.
So
they're...
Yeah, nah, Australian, but they're the two.
One of my favorite Australian discourse particles is goodo.
Oh yeah, I don't. I always think of it as like vaguely. I don't think of it as Australian because I use it all the time. And I haven't surveyed 100 non-Australians to check.
I have life experienced with.
You've asked me something and I've responded with goodo.
Yeah, you just say it and I'm like, and the other Australian linguist that I know also says it. Yeah, and I'm like, I don't have that.
Cheerful agreement.
And you can't say, like, can you say that restaurant was goodo? Or you could be like, that goodo restaurant?
No!
I didn't think so!
That's terrible.
So it's not an adjective anymore. It's like been discourse particleized.
It's entirely in response to someone saying something that you will cheerfully agree with.
So that's like that distinguishes good from goodo. Like that's the
yes.
Whereas I have good in both positions.
Okay.
So I can say good. Let's do that.
It would be weird to say that. We could say goodo.
You could. Okay, does anybody else think of any discourse particles that we haven't mentioned or haven't mentioned enough?
I have a question about something. I don't know if it's... I want you to help me figure out whether it is a discourse particle or not.
Okay, good.
So, I don't do this, but I have a lot of friends who do, some of which are in the room. When they want to say, it's the thing is.
Mm-hmm.
So, they will say, the thing is blah, blah, blah. Like, the is comes up twice, because the first is...
Moti is the person, he's raising his hand.
but it's not just Moti, I've heard this...
There's this double is, the double is, if you're talking about the thing, the double is rather than the thing is. But you can also have, so there are some posts by Mark Lieberman on LanguageLog about the double is, because you can use it in context other than just the thing is. You can say, like, the problem is... Or
what
I'm wondering is, I don't think it's used as a discourse particle. I think it's used as some sort of like, yeah, there is definitely research on it. I don't know it, but I don't think it's a discourse particle. I think it's some sort of repetition.
To reassure us,
like a shortened version of the thing that is this. Like the thing is this.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, I feel like maybe those two is's are doing slightly different things. Because I can say it. I don't think I know if I'd say it terribly often, but I definitely can say the double is.
Yeah, it's super weird for me. Like, I've never said it.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know anybody didn't have it.
I've never said it is exactly the last thing everyone says before being proven wrong.
Tomorrow's Modi's going to tweet at us being like, so she said it.
We're all listening to what Adele says now. To reassure us all, though, this is something that I flagged because I hoped it would come up during the show, and this is in Corey Stamper's Word by Word. Thankfully, they have a copy here because I did not pack mine in my suitcase full of Tim Tams. This is Corey Stamper, who works at Merriam-Webster Dictionary.
We did a whole episode about her book. We really liked it.
Yeah, we're definitely on record as being mega Corey fans. So... The hardest words to sort grammatically are the ones that no one ever notices, the small ubiquities of English, Ask any lexicographer who's been at this gig for a while what word has them hunched over their cubicle at 6 p.m. on a Friday, hands clutched to their temples, the office copy of Quirk open on their desk, while the night janitor loudly scrums with a big recycling bin, and the answer will not be a polysyllabic hammer like sesquipedalian. The answer will be but, like, as. They are sly shapeshifters that often live between parts of speech. They are the ones that will keep coming back to you, you'll keep coming back to throughout your career, to parse and reparse. The ones that will give you a handful of uses that you stare at for days and days before muttering, to hell with it, and labelling them as adverbs. And because English is so flexible, two lexicographers with the same training can look at the same sentence, refer to the same grammars, tear out the same amount of hair, and yet place the target word in two different parts of speech. What can they do but try? So if you're not sure if something is a discourse particle, the answer is probably, and no one else knows either.
Because well, particle is just like the thingamajig. Like, particle is the adverb of, like, actual, of linguists, because linguists use formal definitions for adverbs, and so instead they shove everything in particle that isn't an adverb like quickly or something. Which is, I say they, I mean we. It's definitely a particle. What's a particle? It's like when a doctor is like, oh, you've got, like, undiagnosed symptoms of stuff.
Yeah, it's what's a particle? It's a thing we don't really know how to define. How do we know what it is? How do we define it? Well, we define it as a particle.
It's useful to list them all somewhere, because then you have, it's like marking everything, like, TBD in your grammar. You're like, well, I'll look at all the particles and see if anything else emerges out of this.
But also, reading that out loud was a pain, because it had no spoken discourse particles in it. It's as hard as writing as though you're using them.
I was going to say, one of my other favorite discourse particles, and people in this room will definitely recognize it, is come in French. Because come in Quebec French is a calque of English like, and so you can say like, well, so you can use it in some of the uses, like j'étais comme, as in I was like. J'étais comme, qu'est-ce que tu fais là? I was like, what are you doing? what are you even doing? But you can also say, like, I don't know, somebody give me an example.
That was a really great,
like, comme, je sais pas, like, tu veux faire comme quoi? Like, what do you want to do? Things like you can throw it in. I mean, you can say like there too as a, you know, code switching particle. J'étais like. I don't think you can say j'étais like.
No, not really.
But you can be like.
We've got a pretty safe no from the
phone. Good. Just like a nod or head shake here.
But can you say comme j'étais like? No, like j'étais comme. Can you do that?
Like
no,
j'étais comme.
Not really.
Like if you're code switching, you're like, yeah. No.
Go back to the core. It's always about going back to the corpus.
Going back to the corpus. I bet you can find people on Twitter doing it.
We're also at the point in the evening where all of our native speaker intuitions are breaking down.
I don't even have native speaker intuitions for French. I just have second language pseudo intuitions.
Yeah. Right. Any other questions?
Any other discourse particles?
Or can I ask one?
Okay.
I have one discourse particle one and from the internet and one non-discourse particle one. So we'll kind of, I'll ask the discoursey one and then we can wrap up and have general question time if you would like.
Mm-hmm.
Jen would like to ask, what is the discourse particle that you are keeping an eye on right now? What is the one to watch?
What's the one to watch? I kind of like hashtag as a discourse particle.
Okay.
I know we mentioned it earlier, because I'm just like, is it going to kind of become there? Is it going to travel the decline of grammaticalization? Is it going to get phonologically reduced? Is it going to be hashtag or, like, shtag? Like, are we going
to... Oh, to time travel forward and be like, people are saying hash, why?
But they're going to be like, shtag. Because, like, H's get reduced. Like, that's normal. Because there are definitely kids that are, like, too young to really use the internet that say hashtag in speech. Several linguist parents have reported this.
Valuable source of information.
Alex Darcy, who wrote the book on like, she reported that her, I think, 8-year-old son said hashtag mom joke. Which is amazing.
Bravo.
I think, like, you know, if those kids are using it in a context that's divorced from its original meaning as, like, this thing that you put the lines on, you know, that you put before a thing that you want people to be able to find, then maybe it's going to travel this, like, very interesting path. I also really like slash.
Okay.
Stuff that comes from punctuation, right? So slash, so Anne Curzon has been observing this with her students, because she gets them, she gets her intro students every year to, like, come in and bring in, like, examples of current slang, and then she's been doing this for, like, 10 or 20 years now, so she has this, like, 10 or 20 year slang
to
corpus.
Go to try and sound cool. Like, please, I need to sound cooler around my kids.
No, this is just, like, I want to study this. She doesn't use them.
Okay.
I'm like, this just makes me want to have students. Like, I want a slang corpus someday. I'll be old and I won't know the slang. It's going to be tough. So she gets them to bring it in, and she had them bring, and so somebody brought up slash as in, what are you doing this weekend? Slash, do you want to help me move? What you're like. I recently moved. It's been on my mind. And, so you're using it to signal a topic shift, using it to signal, like, this is related, but it's only kind of related. And so when she did this a couple years ago, wrote this post about slash, I went back and I used my Gmail corpus, which is me looking through 10 years plus of Gmail messages, to say, wow, this doesn't feel new to me at all. Like, I've been using this forever. And it turns out, like, pretty much as long as I've had Gmail, which is since, like, 2005, I've been using this, like, all the way back.
Huh.
And so she was surprised that her students didn't really identify it as new, because to her it was new. And I was like, yeah, if her students are 18 in 2015, it's not new to them, because I've been using it since 2005. And so they've been using it at least that long.
Yeah.
But it obviously comes from the slash and, like, and slash or these kinds of punctuation things, but using it as, like, writing it out in full, using it in conversation to say, like, here's a topic shift, or here's a connector, like a logical connector.
Yeah.
It's like, here's a connector. What's your discourse marker you're watching?
I think, well, we spent half an hour, and this is probably indicative of, like, what we do when we hang out, but we spent half an hour the other day going back and forth and diagnosing man as a discourse.
Oh, yeah.
So, man, it was a really late night last night.
You're not addressing a man. You're not like man, Moti. It was a really hot night last night. Moti's like, I had nothing to do with it, man. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, you can say man too. I can say, oh, Gretchen, man, I'm so tired because of
and
this.
And I'm like, why are you calling me a man? I'm like, man, I agree with you, man.
And, yeah, so that's, I think, obviously a word that still means a particular thing when used in other parts of speech, but definitely
yeah.
on its own little discourse marker.
Well, and there's a bunch of those, because there's, like, oh, boy. It doesn't mean, like, oh, a boy. We don't have any young boys here.
I have discovered this small human man. Oh, boy!
Oh, boy! But we have it as a, like, oh, boy, as in I'm excited.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that's just an idiom, or if that's being used discourse markery there, or discourse markery is what happens when you take a marker and you write discourse markers on your walls.
I think it's a discourse marker because it's signaling, I'm about to tell you something that is interesting and novel information for me and you.
I mean, maybe it's some sort of, like, interjection-y thing, because you have this whole class of stuff like oops or wow.
Oh, yeah.
Like, are those discourse markers?
We didn't even touch those.
Maybe boy is like an oops or a wow. It's some of those, like, semantically weird. Like, they're not the same kind of discourse markers, but they're, like, something. Definitely something.
Now, a reminder that if you ask us any etymology questions, we're just going to get someone to look up etym online. But other than that, are there any other broader linguistics questions, or if you think of a discourse particle one?
I just wanted to offer a tiny anecdote that I saw online about hashtag. It's not as a discourse marker, but it was an anecdote from a band teacher.
Okay. Oh, I saw this one.
Who was saying that his students were calling the sharks hashtags. So, like, a piece in D hashtag. Or, like, instead of, like, sharps and flats, like, it's the same symbol.
Oh, that's so great.
Like, symphony in D hashtag minor. Yeah, I saw that one. And actually, this happened to me at linguistics conferences as well, because in linguistics, there's the phonetic notation where you use the hash mark to indicate a word boundary. And so, like, back when I was in school, which is not even that long ago, you have, like, you know, hash mark, you know, and then at the beginning of the word, and then you have, like, a vowel or something. But now I have gone to conferences and heard, like, younger grad students saying, you know, hashtag beginning of the word. And you're like, well, so it's, like, become the name for the symbol in addition to the name for hash mark used to tag things, which is the initial function. So, semantic change is cool.
Yeah, so before I knew that hashtag was a word, I used dièse, which is sharp in French. So when I saw a hashtag, I said really like dièse sarcasm.
Oh! So
the
inverse.
Like the other way around.
That is so good.
That's good. And the technical name for it, one of the other names, you have the pound sign and the octothorpe.
Yeah, I feel it was a really missed opportunity that we don't say...
Octothorpe sarcasm.
Octothorpe weekend. Octothorpe loving it.
Octothorpe mum joke. Like, I don't think I can do it.
Missed opportunity.
let's hashtag Octothorpe. Let's make Octothorpe a thing.
Well, I'll ask my
okay.
second...
Well, I was going to ask... Okay.
Oh, yeah, unless you've got one.
Well, I've got one. So, this is a question specifically for Lauren.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And we've been touching on it so far, but one of our patrons wants to know, what Canadianisms have you been noticing while you're in Montreal?
Ah. Well, let's see. I mean, so I have been to the other side of Canada, what's that?
Yeah.
West side of Canada before. I do know where I am right now, I think.
It's okay, I'll make sure she gets home tonight.
I have really great Canadian cousins that do beautiful they do beautiful Canadian phrasing and their vowels. It's wonderful. Something that I cannot mimic very well. And so
you can't do about and ice cream.
Well, that one's hard because I have to roticize things as well. So
ice cream?
Oh no, I don't because
it's ice cream. It does not have an R.
It's got an R in it, and I just get really panicked around all R sounds when I'm in North America.
If you say ice cream, you've got your problems.
I have a non-rootic accent. I use no R.
No R's anywhere.
No, anyway.
Lawton, I think that's going to be a problem.
It's going to be really hard. So one thing I find really interesting is just the way Canadian English, like Australian English, in terms of words will sit kind of not... Everyone always talks about British English and American English, and they're so different. And like, well, like, that's fine.
Hi.
Whatever, the other people. And like, Australians and Canadians are always in the middle going, we've learned to move across both, and we use some that are from America and some from England, and, you know, we all cope actually fine. And you can actually live your whole life calling something chips when other people mean crisps and the world doesn't end. It's really interesting to me, like, I never know here, because in England I usually default assume that they use what we use, but then they mess it up because they say aubergine instead of eggplant and things like that.
And we have eggplant.
Phew, see, I found my people.
And we also, like, they have chips and we have chips too, so it's
yeah,
really
so
good.
Yeah, so there are lots of, but the thing is here I kind of have to go with the assumption that it's usually the North American, so you go to the store and you eat cookies and crackers instead of going to the shop and eating biscuits all around
and crisps
and we eat chips as well as so yeah it's like it's interesting. I never quite know if I should presume the American, and because like I don't want to offend people and just assume that you speak the same kind of North American English as your southern neighbors, but yeah, so that's the kind of thing. And then I've just really loved being in Montreal and kind of discovering how Quebecois French and English sit alongside each other and who uses what in what context. I could just like, I have so many great stories. My favorite is we went to see the laser light show in the church, in the basilica, which like that bit is not about language. That was just fabulous. But at the start in the announcement, they did the announcement in French first. And at the end they said, you know, bon spectacle. because, you know, you're about to enjoy a beautiful spectacle. And then they did the whole English announcement, like, hello, welcome, please, no photos, exits at the back. And then at the end of that, they said, bon spectacle. And I was just like, it was so beautiful because it was just like this subtle reminder at the end. It's like, look, we spoke English for your convenience. And as we came in, the guy who had the little map and showed us like where we were meant to sit and stuff, and where he was like, you know, he heard us speaking and he just went, oh, English again. Okay. Welcome.
And you've been getting bonjour hi.
I've been getting a lot of bonjour hi. Unsurprisingly, I say one word and people then just move into English. And so I've really, like,
you've been doing really well with the mercis, because, like, if you go to a restaurant or something and I order for us, and then you don't say anything, and then they stay in French, and then they bring you a thing, and you're like, merci, and they're like,
merci, that's it, we're done. No, I can't.
So it's like the one word she knows now.
I can do cafe French, but I really just like the way people shift and that it can happen and life is fine and everyone generally finds the thing that works for them. So that's been the like specifically Montreal pleasant experience.
That's cool. Yeah. And we encountered this in the podcast with like the, you know, US and UK like big centers of gravity thing, which is also something that you run into in Canada, and I'm sure if and when I ever go to Australia, I'm gonna also encounter, because like when we do the transcripts for the show by letting YouTube's auto captions like do a first draft and then having a human
emphasis fix the definitely draft. On draft. Like.
YouTube's auto captions really wants to think our show is called Link Susie, as in. I don't know who Susie is, but she's on the show every time. But we have to pick on the captions, do we want the US or the UK auto transcripts for a show that's hosted by an Australian and a Canadian? And we can't pick, there are actually two dialects of English being spoken here, and maybe you'd like to try to like figure out who's speaking what. And we can't even pick one country that's correct for either of us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, what was it? Because we read it through the last show, we mentioned bonjour hi, and what did it come out as? It was bones were high.
That's a very different type of show.
So yeah, that's made my Canada language experience.
Okay, did you have another question?
I did. I had one that only you can answer.
Oh, good.
Funnily enough. Aren't you writing a book and how's that going?
Funny you should ask. And if my editor, who is not here, I'm working very hard on the book. So my book is currently in line edits. I'm writing a book about internet language. So here's some hashtag for...
Hashtag excitement.
Hashtag exciting. So emoji and memes and all of the fun internet things to analyze. Cool. I have been diving deep into the memeish literature recently. There's a memeish literature. It's classified under folklore studies by some people.
Is it called memeology?
That's what people on the internet call it. Advanced memeology. Yeah, so I am writing a book about internet language. It's going to be published by Riverhead with Penguin. At some point in 2018 is all I'm currently allowed to say. It's going to... Wait, I think I can... Am I announcing the title yet?
No.
Because I don't know, and I want to know first.
So we are currently in discussions about finalizing the title and getting a cover designed and all of these exciting things, so we'll probably hear about that soon. And since you guys are in Montreal, I'm probably going to have some sort of, like, book launch event at some point in 2018. So if you would like to be kept informed about that, you are all very welcome to come.
I'd like to be kept informed.
Okay, I don't know if we can have it in your shop, because, like, we don't have space in this shop.
Or you have a backup location.
Yep.
You guys have a backup? Okay.
You guys are the best.
But I've already promised Adele and Moti that I will sign a bunch of copies in the bookstore for them, so those will exist.
Yay. Thank you all so much. Thank you to Argo for having us. Thank you very much.